Hi, everyone, and welcome to Academic Dean, where we connect with passionate college leaders who share their stories and viewpoints of higher education, especially lessons learned along the way. Academic Dean is sponsored by Myers-McRae Executive Search and Consulting. Now, here's your host, Dr. Dave Gercheck.
Hi, everyone. Today, I'd like to welcome Dr. Russell Frohart to our show. Dr. Frohart is the Dean of Academic Success at Northwest Vista College in San Antonio, Texas. Hi, Russell. So glad to have you on our podcast today.
Hey, Dave. Thanks so much for having me, man. This is awesome to get to be able to talk about my college and what we do.
Well, let's talk about your college. So tell me a little bit about it and why students select your institution.
Yeah, I work at Northwest Vista College. It is a Hispanic-serving community college. We have about 67% of our student population is Hispanic, which is here in San Antonio, Texas. We're one of five independently accredited colleges within a district, the Alamo Colleges District. So we all have kind of our own little personalities between the five colleges that are scattered throughout San Antonio. It's a pretty big city. And Northwest Vista sits obviously in the northwestern part of the city. We enroll about 19,000 students as this fall, and about 20% of those are dual credit students. So we service Northside ISD, which is the third biggest ISD in the state of Texas. So we have some really important K through 12 partners that we serve. So about 20% of our students are in those programs. Another 10% of our students are in our workforce or our career and technical education programs, which is part of what I oversee, as well as the STEM field. So I oversee the natural sciences and the math and engineering and those workforce programs. So most of our students are working students. Most of them are part-time students. They come to us because we are affordable and we are accessible and we are the front door to higher ed for most of them. And so that means we have to have all of the resources in place to serve lots of folks with very differing, you know, academic and career goals. So we take pride in our academic programs. We have fantastic faculty. We have great resources for students to make sure that they succeed, no matter how they're coming to us, where they're getting perfect scores on their SATs, or they're, you know, they're coming in looking for career training or upskilling. So we have great tutoring resources, libraries, advising, counseling services, amazing folks that work in our student success areas to try to support students so that they can focus on their academic goals and get a credential. And most of our students are transfer students, so they intend to transfer to one of the many universities in the region. Our biggest transfer partner is University of Texas San Antonio, but we also do a lot of transfer to Texas A&M San Antonio, Texas State, and then there are several other smaller private comprehensive and liberal arts universities in the area that we transfer our students to.
Do you have anything new happening on campus?
Yeah, we. I'm excited. I mean, some of the stuff that we have is, you know, the things that administrators get excited over, you know, new money, new buildings. I'm fortunate to be in one of those new buildings. So the Cedar Elm STEM Center is a building that we were able to build as a result of a bond package that we passed back in 2018. It's called Cedar Elm because all of our buildings on campus are named after trees, local native trees. The STEM disciplines are growing, and we have actually several grants and initiatives to try to get more underrepresented folks into the STEM fields. So in order to do that, we had to update some of our facilities and expand some of our our faculty offices, our labs, our support services. So we were able to build this center, which mostly hosts kind of our dry sciences. So chemistry, physics, engineering, math, geology are over here. And it has, I'll give you a few of the specs. It's a little over 53,000 square feet and cost about $34 million initially. Has 17 classrooms, 7 labs, a tutoring lab, conference areas and stuff like that. So it's a beautiful building. Overland Partners is who the architects were that helped us with that. They won an award, a local architecture award for the design of the building. It incorporates lots of, there's a big open courtyard downstairs and breezeways and space where students get to hang out in the lobby and collaborative spaces. So feel really fortunate to be in this space. We had two other projects that were the result of that bond. One was a welcome center. So we got to put all of our resources for advising veterans, financial aid, really most of our student success services got to be in one facility, which is also gorgeous. It opened in the middle of the pandemic. So folks got to move over there. It's called the Desert Willow Welcome Center. And the third project is a renovation of an existing space that we haven't started on yet. So that's kind of some of the new physical stuff that's happening on campus. We also got a special allotment to build a new standalone veteran center. So that's currently under construction.
Wow. That, you know, as a retired dean, that seems really exciting. When you're talking about new buildings, that's the top of the list right there.
Yeah. I mean, when we first started working on it, they were like, well, so we're going to build a dean's suite. And I'm like, who's that for? They're like, you, man. oh, this is cool. I get to help build some stuff. So programmatically, I have some really exciting stuff that's happening. our coordinating board here, the Texas Higher Education Coordinating Board, just approved our proposal for a new bachelor's program in cloud computing. So we are, you know, stereotypically a 2-year college. However, some laws that were passed a few years ago allow us to offer bachelor's programs. So each of our 5 colleges are trying to put together bachelor's programs that meet the needs of the region. So ours is in cloud computing. We have some really strong IT programs here at the college, and we're expanding our cloud computing into a bachelor's degree. So that's exciting. We're hoping to get our regional accreditor approval in the next few months, and then we're recruiting students to start in that bachelor program in the fall. We have a couple of new PTECs. So I don't know how familiar people are with PTECs. It's an acronym for Pathways in Technology Early College High Schools. So it's dual credit, right? It's an early college high school model, but it's dedicated to a specific technology field. And ours is a partnership with Burney ISD, which is another K-12 ISD that we serve. And it's in cybersecurity. So we're in our second cohort of those folks. We thought it would be just kind of a handful of students in the first couple of years, but we got 70 students in the first cohort and another 70 in the second. So I think it's going really well. And, you know, students are excited about the idea of being able to finish with an associate's degree in one of these high wage, high demand fields as soon as they're done with high school, right? It's a pretty appealing program. We're about to start another PTEC in Seguin, which is a town that's outside of San Antonio a little bit. That one's going to be in pharmacy technology, another one of our workforce programs. And then I just wanted to highlight, I actually just got off of a meeting with some folks at UTSA, because we're trying to expand a model of a program that we started in engineering here. It's called TATE, or the Transfer Academy for Tomorrow's Engineers. And it was initially put together because we had students that were running into kind of a barrier taking one of their engineering classes. They either had to transfer early and not finish with us, or finish up with us, but it held them back for a semester or a year when they did transfer over to UTSA. So we created a program where they can be co-enrolled at both institutions at the same time. So here and our university partner. And we've had, I think we're on our fourth cohort of that program. Mm-hmm. And it's been really great for our engineering students to kind of get rid of the muddiness in between the transferring. So we're trying to use that as a model for more seamless transfers to UTSA in all of our disciplines. So we've got a couple of MOUs that we've been working on to include our Promise program. So we have something called Alamo Promise. We like to Alamoize everything and put it in front.
Yes, when I was in San Antonio, I absolutely went there to see that. So
yeah, it's the Alamo City. It's and you know, we're the Alamo colleges. So Alamo Promise is a last dollar scholarship that's similar to other Promise programs across the country. And for students who qualify, it's basically it pays for the rest of their college that doesn't get covered by financial aid. So we started off with just a handful of high schools in the city. The pandemic hit, so we were going to expand earlier, but just this past year we expanded Promise to the entire county. So it's something like 76 high schools that now have access to Promise. And then our university partners have their own Promise. So we're working on these Promise to Promise agreements between institutions.
Well, I think you've touched on a little bit, but what other things is your college doing to prepare students for today's workforce?
Yeah, our system-wide, our moonshot is really to end generational poverty in San Antonio through educational opportunities. So that is kind of our North Star for the things that we're concentrating on. So a lot of that means trying to figure out the best way to make access easier, right? We're trying to do that through some strategic enrollment management goals and strategies. So we adopted the guided pathways model. I don't know if you're familiar, but a lot of community colleges several years ago used that model, which is instead of just dropping the whole catalog in front of somebody, you kind of give them these meta majors or, you know, kind of lanes or pathways that help them to make their choices, as opposed to saying you either have to do this one thing or everything. It's kind of more of like a lane. So working on those, we implemented that system the past several years, and we're trying to expand on that by really focusing on our schedule, the way that we build our schedule, making sure it's accessible, integrating things like continuing education to credit bridges, credit for prior learning, stackable credentials within several of our workforce programs. We've had a big initiative to grow our micro-credentials and embed those either within curriculum or parallel to curriculum, really working with business partnerships, both in workforce and transfer programs. And I don't know how much you follow the politics in Texas, but we just passed a bill this past legislative session that changes the way that community colleges are funded from kind of an enrollment model to a performance model. So it's called House Bill 8. And it really is kind of rewarding folks for getting credentials as opposed to just headcounts and contact hours and things like that. So
That's great. I people have been wanting that forever. Congratulations for Texas doing that.
Yeah, it's going to be a big benefit for us because we've always kind of been set up that way. But we're going back through our curriculum to make sure that those programs are really stacked the way that they need to be, so that students are getting what they need, and it's also beneficial to the institution. So I guess the last part is in terms of your question about what we're focusing on at NVC specifically. We just went through a new strategic plan process. We do these every 5 years or so in higher ed, and what's come out of that is really a focus on making sure that, in addition to our institution being accessible, we want students to feel like they belong. So making sure that we're honoring their culture, infusing belongingness into our pedagogy, to our landscape, the way that we go about business. So that's going to be our QEP, our quality enhancement plan, and as well as our kind of the centerpiece of our strategic plan going forward. So really focusing on those folks who need representation and access to higher ed, and making sure that they feel like they belong here.
You know, since you mentioned micro-credentials, I usually ask my guests about that. And I've heard both sides of the coin of either for it or not too excited about it. But how do you see micro-credentials impacting the future of higher ed?
Yeah, I think it's super exciting. We just, one of my colleagues and I just presented at one of the Pathways conferences about micro-credentials. We have a really great support team, offices at district that usually focus on our online offerings. They've hired some instructional designers and some folks that have helped us to design digital badges and micro-credentials both in-house. So, things like empathy and critical thinking, stuff that's more kind of geared towards what you would assess in a general education class or learning outcomes, making those into specific badges and having a curriculum around those, and having them be pathways. So we have like a pathway of micro-credentials for students who like want to do international work. So, you start off with a trip, and then, you focus on some curriculum and you kind of have more like a capstone experience. So having those sequences that can be built into some of our existing curriculum. And then what I've been most involved with, especially in workforce, is integrating micro-credentials from industry into our existing curriculum. So we had a partnership with Dell. They reached out to us. They had some stuff they wanted to do in tech support and sales. And we have a customer service and sales program. So we were able to take their curriculum and kind of run it parallel to our existing curriculum in marketing and sales. So at the same time, they're getting our credential in an associate's degree, they're getting credentials from Dell and kind of their foot in the door at Dell so that they, can start a job or upskill a job. And then similarly, we're doing something similar with that bachelor's program that I mentioned. We have 10 of Amazon Web Services existing micro-credentials built into that bachelor's program. So,
wow, that's a great idea.
Yeah. As students are finishing, one or two classes, they gain the skills to be able to sit for the AWS certification for a micro-credential in machine learning or, cloud networks that are recognized by industry, so that when they go out to look for a job, they can put that on their resume or on their LinkedIn account, so that folks know that that's what they're capable of doing. So I think the biggest issue, back to your question about the good and the bad, the biggest issue is it's kind of the Wild West in terms of who says these are credentials of value, right? So how do I know if you have a digital badge that says you're a critical thinker, who says so? Right? Is that Credly or ACE or some other entity that's vetted that curriculum and make sure that you're really performing in those areas? I think that's the next step. We need to kind of all agree on what's the value of these things.
Yeah. Well, how else is your college collaborating with local businesses then to create mutually beneficial relationships to address some of your regional challenges?
We have a business council at our college. Of course, we have advisory committees for all of our workforce programs. So that means having people. So for example, in our IT programs, we have, you know, representatives from Rackspace and Accenture and IBM and, you know, the kind of the tech folks that would be hiring people coming out of our programs, serve on our advisory committees and review our curriculum. So they let us know to make sure that our curriculum is up to date and is providing the skills that they're looking for employment. We're working on a project to try to make that a little bit more efficient. So having kind of C-suite level folks be able to meet on an advisory council that reports to the chancellor of our district. So instead of having five different advisory committees that sometimes have duplicate membership or, you know, don't have the folks that have the kind of strategic view of what's going on in the region and the landscape in mind, we're hoping to have some of those CEOs and executive level folks meet on similar types of advisory boards with our chancellor and our strategic team at the district, in addition to those who, you know, help us out with curriculum and stuff. So part of the pathway stuff also encourage us to make sure that we're always doing a landscape analysis of what's going on in terms of jobs, wages. We're trying to accelerate. I mean, back to the micro-credential question you asked, so many folks want stuff faster, you know, so we're working on ways to try to offer things in 8-week terms, you know, smaller terms, faster paths to credentials for folks that are really looking to kind of upskill quickly. We have a grant that we got from the federal government that's turned into a program called SA Ready to Work, which is millions of dollars to upskill folks that are looking to, you know, really get skills in a particular field, usually workforce fields, so that they can go out and they can take it in 9, 12, 15 months and then be really marketable out there in the business world. So constantly trying to get a sense of what's out there in the landscape in terms of jobs that are available, family sustaining wages. We don't want to get people into jobs where they're not making enough money to support their families. And then trying to make clear that the pathways from, you know, some kind of entry level jobs to, you know, job promotion and those higher level careers that folks are looking for.
Well, since you're talking about jobs, how is your college preparing students for jobs that may not even exist yet?
Yeah, that's a tough one. I mean, I started out in the liberal arts world, right? So I taught, I was a faculty member at St. Edward's University, you know, went through public universities, and, you know, my wife is a professor at one of these small liberal arts universities. And I really do believe in the philosophy behind training folks for skills as opposed for, you know, specific jobs necessarily. So I think making sure that students know how to communicate, know how to be critical thinkers, really understand social questions, you know, ethics, how to make decisions so that it's benefiting society as well as the particular discipline that you're in. I think those are really the ways to prepare people for those jobs that don't exist yet. I mean, I'm sure there will be, I mean, we're already seeing folks that are curating AI, right? And ChatGPT and, you know, through different networks and softwares, and those jobs didn't exist 6 months ago, yeah. Right? But I mean, we have folks that, like our cloud program, our cybersecurity program, they understand kind of the nuts and bolts of that stuff. And then, you know, you layer on top of that the critical thinking and communication parts so that they can apply it to the next thing that doesn't even really exist anymore. So we're trying to, you know, we try to stay on top of the technology. We try to infuse our pedagogy so that folks are good citizens and are aware of the moral questions as well as just the logistics or operational components of what's required for a job. And then just really making sure that we have a handle on what's available in terms of growing careers in the region. So the healthcare sector, IT, lots of business management kinds of jobs. These are where we're putting those bachelor's programs. And then a recent collaboration that our new president, Amy Bosley, came to us a few months ago from Valencia College and is serving as our president at MVC. And she quickly established a partnership with one of our sister colleges, San Antonio College. They have some workforce programs that would just really be hard for us to get up and going on our own in nursing and law enforcement. I mean, these are big, expensive programs, right? So instead of us building our own, we're just going to host some of their programs at our campus. So she asked me to head up some of that work, and we're already going to start hosting their EMT program. Is going to start being hosted at our schools starting in the spring. So those kinds of collaborations, I think, get at those future jobs, whether we know about them or not, making sure that we know the skills that folks need. And that's a great, I mean, EMT is a great entry-level job to do lots of healthcare stuff, right?
Yeah. A lot of physicians, a lot of PAs, a lot of nurses started as EMTs.
Yeah, absolutely. So whether they want to go on to be paramedics and go the fire route, or they want to go into allied health, we just want to make sure that folks on our side of town have access to those programs and kind of grow the availability of those kinds of programs.
Yeah. Well, you know, we've talked a lot about jobs and workforce and micro-credentials, and I'm just impressed with all the stuff that you guys are doing. But
thanks.
Here's my question, though. How is your college incorporating community service and civic engagement into the educational process to make some people believe would make more well-rounded citizens?
Yeah, that's we started a project that kind of coincided with the guided pathways model. We call them Alamo Institutes here. Like I said, we Alamoize things. along with that project, we part of the philosophy of Guided Pathways is to really get more involvement in experiential learning. So we put together a task force that established a platform called, I'll let you guess, Alamo Experience. Which is a platform that tracks students' involvement both in the classroom, but really more outside the classroom, doing field work, doing community service, doing internships, doing kind of the more civic minded stuff. So our commitment was when we established that program was that every single student who comes through one of our colleges will have at least one opportunity for an experiential learning activity. And then we track that on a co-curricular transcript. So obviously some folks are going to be, are going to have big ones, right? They're in student government and clubs and volunteering and doing internships and doing apprenticeships. And all of that is captured on their co-curricular transcript. And I think it really encourages them to get out and apply what they're learning in the classroom to, you know, what's going on in the world around them, to this, to their city, to be more civic minded, be more service oriented. And I mean, from my early experiences as a junior faculty member, I was in charge of a community service class. And the intention was, my field is in psychology and neuroscience, you know, go out there and see what it's like, get some experience before you commit to, you know, your full degree or graduate degree. You don't want to work with kids, you know, get a PhD in developmental psychology if you don't like kids, right? you don't want to try to get a medical degree if you faint when you see blood. So I think it's really important to get people exposed early to those experiences. And I do think it makes them more civic minded, you know, that see how their, whatever their career of choice is, how it really serves the community that they're living in.
Great point. Well, here's my last question. What advice would you give a prospective student when choosing the right college or university for their education?
Yeah, it's a great question. I mean, my initial response to that is do your homework, right? Do some research. I have a junior in high school, and you know, he has the benefit of two parents that are in higher ed. So we have a jump on things. But I talked to so many folks who, you know, the stuff that they're trying to figure out for higher ed is really big, kind of based on hearsay and reputation, and you know, not stuff that's rooted in data and facts. So I would advise people, you know, U.S. News and World Report is a great place to start to see the kind of things that different colleges and universities have. But I would send people more toward like College Navigator, which is a tool that shows, you know, basically IPEDS data. So how many students, what the price is, what people are really, really paying, the kinds of programs that are offered, the kind of clubs and organizations that are available. And, you know, folks typically know what fits them, right? So where do they want to live? How do they want to spend their time? Does the institution support folks that are wanting to take classes part-time like the majority of our students do? Do they have to work and support a family? And are there systems in place to help them do that? Or is it the expectation really that they go be at a residential facility and take classes full-time, and that's really the only option? So I really say, kind of back to your last question, Do some service work, or do some work in the field that you think you want to do, and then do the research on programs that are available at a college or university that you're considering. And back to your previous question about our strategic plan, like it should feel good, right? You should feel like you belong there, and that the people like you and they want you to be there, and that you feel welcome and that you can succeed there for sure. So definitely go visit and talk to the people, talk to students, talk to staff.
Super. Well, Russell, thanks so much for being on the podcast. I really enjoyed our conversation.
Thank you so much, Dave. I appreciated it, and you know, love talking about myself and my institution. So this was fun. Thanks, man.
Well, that wraps up today's episode. Thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. And make sure to visit our website at academicdean.com. Also, if you enjoy our podcast, please don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Academic Dean is sponsored by Myers-McRae Executive Search and Consulting. Thanks again for tuning in. Until next time.